I had a thing with those guys. Hey, you're not all going to be big leaguers. You know, you're not. Sorry, 1%. 1%. There's more brain surgeons in America than 750 big league baseball players. We're not talking about minor leagues. We're talking about the big leagues. There's more brain surgeons in America than big leaguers. So you're not all going to be big leaguers, but you got a chance to be a big league husband, a big league father, a big league human being. And that was kind of the goal in our program once I got things settled, and hopefully I became that kind of leader.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome back, or welcome to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. This is your baseball coaching source for certified audio gold and the place that you come to connect with the very best baseball minds in our game. Here we are, guys, episode 88, as we keep moving this podcast forward, giving you an opportunity to connect with some of the very best that are out there, an opportunity to learn, an opportunity to grow, an opportunity to challenge yourself across every single front in our game. We hit you with fundamentals. We hit you with interviews. Just like today's our Dugout Chatter episode, we take a little different route. We go extra innings with one of the real legends inside of baseball. We try to hit you from a lot of different angles, guys. We're just so appreciative that you are dialing into the show and you're using this certified audio gold to get better, to move your program forward and make your players better and grow the game of baseball. And we appreciate each of you guys for that. Help us by following the three golden rules of podcasting: subscribe, review, and share. Make sure you're subscribed to this show on your phone, your computer, your tablet. And if you really want to go the extra mile, you grab all the phones around you, whether that's your friends or all the phones that are sitting there in Walmart, and you subscribe those phones to our podcast. Leave us a review on there. 5-star ratings are always great. Those reviews, guys, help more coaches find this show when they're searching for their next podcast. And then go the extra step and share this podcast through social media, through text groups in your phone, emails. Just make sure the people around you know about this resource and they're dialing in as well. Connect with us on social media. We'd love to hear from you guys. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can also find more information over on our website, abca.org. Look at our membership benefits. Look at our different events that we're doing. Think about bringing an ACE clinic to your community. All that information is right there on our website. And if you've got more questions, reach out to me directly on Twitter at CoachSheets3, or you can send me an email at Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. We've had a number of different folks reach out over the last few weeks. I feel like I got to give those guys a shout out. Adam Robertson from Harrogate, Tennessee, sent me a great email. Joe Kaiser from Foster City, California. Keith Matthews dove into the youth baseball podcast we had a few weeks ago, and it gave him some clarity on how he should go about approaching his son and his team. And then Jim Palowski, my good friend from Detroit, found the ABCA through the podcast, then attended a Barnstormers event, and then went the extra step and showed up to our indie convention. He's figured out a way to get to Dallas. Guys, that's the beauty of where this thing goes. So again, when we talk about the share aspect, think about sending this out to as many people as you can reach. You just don't know where it goes. And certainly we appreciate your help on that. Another Dugout Chatter episode and an opportunity to connect with one of the real living legends of college baseball. This week's show connects us with Andy Lopez, a two-time World Series champion and a guy that has perspective from a lot of different levels, including starting his coaching career on the high school level, then working his way up to Division II school, then taking Pepperdine, taking the University of Florida, and taking the University of Arizona, three different programs, to the College World Series, and eventually winning the World Series with Pepperdine and Arizona in 2012. A guy that's got so much to offer inside the show, and as we recount his career in baseball, Andy's going to go into a lot of different details. This is a pen and paper, take feverish notes episode. He's going to give you a lot of nuggets from his pockets in terms of how we should go about leading young men, how detailed he was in his preparations and where that came from, a little John Wooden insight from his time at UCLA, and it's an opportunity for all of us to really understand how Andy went about molding young men, building programs that eventually led to a couple different dog piles in Omaha. We're excited about an opportunity to connect with an ABCA Hall of Famer and a guy that has so much to offer our coaches paying attention to the show. So let's not waste another moment. Let's dive right in as we connect with the legendary Andy Lopez. He's our guest on this week's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And get ready, coaches. This great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast today. We're bringing you an extra innings episode where we look to connect with some of the legends that are inside our game, and we've got one on deck for you today. We're excited to talk through a guy who has such an extensive experience on the college level, one of three coaches to lead three different programs of the College World Series, one of two to bring home the national championship. We're going to be connecting with former University of Arizona head coach, the legendary Andy Lopez. Coach Lopez, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure, Sheets. Thank you for having me.
Heck yeah, man. It's been a no-brainer to try to get you on here and trying to figure out the right time. We figure, man, right around Omaha, a place that you know extremely well, the timing would be perfect. So, again, we're thankful to have you on. And let's dive into it because there's so much that I want to expand upon inside your career and your viewpoint on the game. But where we always start, you being a recent inductee into the ABCA Hall of Fame. And so just if you could talk through just what the ABCA has meant to you over the course of your coaching career, then certainly what it means to jump inside that Hall of Fame.
Wow. I'm not sure I can give enough words of accolades for that organization. I mean, ABCA has been unbelievable. I was a young high school baseball coach. I'm sure we'll talk about that here yep. in a minute. But I was 23 years of age. I'm a high school baseball coach. I just got done playing at UCLA. I get this head job, and I'm thinking, okay, now what do I do, right? I've been a player all my life. Now I'm going to coach these guys. And lo and behold, the ABCA was there, and I joined the organization. That was, my God, 1978, I think, about 78, something like that. And I remember going to the first convention down in San Diego, California. I'm from Southern California. I made the two-hour drive and had a chance to go to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes breakfast, where my faith was the most important thing in my life, and got a chance to meet a lot of good people there. But listening to all the topics and, during the convention and then getting the flyers. And I just cannot express how much the ABCA really built my coaching life in many, many ways. And then the friends you meet, boy, the guys you meet later on. And you don't realize it. You know, little did I know when I was in high school at Jamaricosa, when I ran into Ron Polk and Mike Martin at a tender age, that I would one day be in the same conference with Ron Polk in the SEC and be a so-called arch rival between Florida and Florida State with Mike Martin, where we became dear, dear friends. So tremendous situation. So, again, I can't say enough about the ABCA. And the Hall of Fame, my goodness, I never thought that day would come about. No, sure. Come on, man. I was a high school coach, and like I said, figuring out how to win a high school baseball game in Los Angeles, and 38 years later, they called up and said, "Hey, we're gonna put you in this Hall of Fame." And I went, "You got the right number? Are you sure? Yeah. I mean, you sure talking to the right guy here?" No, to be in that organization and to be a part of the Hall of Fame is way beyond anything I ever dreamed. Way beyond everything I ever dreamed.
That's so awesome, and you hit on all the various aspects that all of our guests touch on, Andy. They're talking about certainly the learning aspect, the ability to share information and take other viewpoints and bring them back to your program. They talk about the networking side of things. Well, that's, building new relationships or continue to grow old relationships. And, those aspects, they just don't seem to go away. I'm just, you and I got a chance to catch up a little bit right before your Hall of Fame induction. When you walk into that space and even being out of coaching, I mean, were you just flooded with emotions? They just come back and you're swatting them away from your face. It had to be, right?
Oh, man. Like I said, the irony to it, we may get into this, later on when we talk here, but I never, ever, ever dreamed of being a coach. That was never a plan, ever. It's unbelievable. I took a call from a gentleman, and I thought it was a prank phone call. And he ended up offering me the baseball job at Maricosta High School in Manhattan Beach, California, Los Angeles. Like I said, I just got out of UCLA, and I was drafted and I didn't sign a professional contract. That's another story itself. Mm-hmm. And so I was sitting around going, okay, now what do I do? And I took some real estate courses. I applied for a job with Aetna Life selling life insurance. And I get this phone call, and I think it's a prank phone call. And I end up being a real call, and I take this job, and I'm a baseball coach. And next thing I know, I'm involved in an organization, the ABCA, I can call coaches, I can write them, I can, back then there was an email, but you can write a little note to them, and you get information back, and you get bunt defense, and you get first and third defenses, and then you meet them in person, And they're great people. I mean, they're great people. I think that's the one thing people don't truly understand. If you're not a part of the ABCA, you're missing out on a chance to meet really good human beings that are pretty doggone good coaches, and they're willing to share their information with you. So, again, it's an amazing organization. It's the best thing out there.
That's awesome. For a young coach,
it's the best thing out there.
That's it. Obviously, we want guys to come join us there in Dallas at our next convention coming up January 3rd through the 6th. And you heard it here from Coach Lopez first. That's your stamp of approval. You started going into this, and I want you to really expand upon it. When you talk about growing up, and we're going to get into your upbringing here in a second, but growing up, there's a point where most of the coaches that we talk to, Coach, that they describe a point where the game became different. Now, whether that playing multiple sports and then this one just emerged, or it was already in their family and the game from a very early age was important to them, can you really pinpoint a moment where the game just became different? It became less of a hobby and more of a passion, which certainly propelled you forward?
I truly can. I'm one of those kids from back. I graduated from high school in 1971. So I was fortunate in that era. It's changed now tremendously, obviously, mm-hmm. with all the specialization. But I played everything. I played basketball, baseball, football, and I played American Legion baseball and what have you. But that's what happened. The summer of my sophomore year in high school, I was asked to play on the American Legion baseball team. Mm-hmm. And I come from a great baseball town, San Pedro, California. People like Joey Amalfitano, Gary Maddox, who played for the Philadelphia Phillies, mm-hmm. Alan Ashby, who caught for the Houston Astros and still does TV work, radio work for the Houston Astros. Brian Harper, who was a part of the Minnesota Twins World Championship from that town as well. So I really was around good baseball people as a young kid growing up. But it was just a game, and it stayed a game. But my sophomore year, I was on an American Legion team with three or four guys, Jeff Peterson, who went to USC and won four national championships in a row for Coach Dado, was on that team. A guy named Joe Lovito, and God rest his soul, Joe passed away, but he was the second pick in the nation back in like 73 or 74, Joe Lovito with the Texas Rangers, and Washington Senators at first at that time, but anyway, switched around. But, just good baseball people. I think I got five at-bats that entire summer, maybe 10, because I was the youngest guy on that team with all these guys that were going to be big leaguers, Gary Maddox and all these other people, Alan Ashby, all these guys. I mean, I sit around and watch these guys and go, man, you know, I mean, these guys are pretty dang good.
Yeah, they can play.
But what hit me, Sheets, is that it hit me because I'd hear them talking during practice around the cage. And I was 16 years old, and I was just kind of minding my business. But I heard these guys talking about pro ball. I heard these guys talking about scholarships. I heard these guys talking about things that as a kid growing up, my mom and dad are both from Mexico.
Yep.
And I didn't go to school, didn't read the English language. My mom never drove a car in her life.
Mm-hmm.
My dad worked from 5:30 at night to 3:30 in the morning, gained his citizenship by joining the Second World War. And so so going to college and that just wasn't discussed in our family. Not because they didn't want it, but because they didn't experience school themselves. You know, my mom was a farm laborer as a child, 12 years of age. So for me, I'm hanging around the cages with these guys that sophomore year of Legion baseball, and it hits me. Hey, you know what? I might be able to get a scholarship out of this doggone game. I might be able to play pro ball on this doggone game. So I quit football and basketball. I quit football and basketball, and I guess I became a specialized kid, but I just basically concentrated on baseball, and lo and behold, I ended up going to UCLA.
See, as you were talking through that, I'm thinking you're listening to these conversations. They're talking about, you know, approaches. They're talking about hunting pitches. They're talking about movement on the field, and you're going, oh, wow, you guys are showing me a completely different game. That's not what you were going to. You completely shifted on me. You were going to, this was your way out of the barrio.
Yes,
this was your way.
Exactly.
This was your way to go take care of your family.
Hey, let me tell you something. Up until that point, my thought was, okay, I'll graduate from high school and I'll go do what everybody else does in my neighborhood.
Right.
I grew up in Rancho San Pedro projects in right there in Los Angeles. It's 20 minutes south of LAX.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, I'm going to graduate from high school and hopefully I don't get anybody pregnant because that's what everybody did. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yep.
And I'll go work at the shipyard, or I'll go be a longshoreman like my mom or like my dad and my uncles and my cousins. Or maybe I'll work at the naval shipyard, or I'll work in the fish canneries and life will move on. And all of a sudden I'm hanging around with these guys and they're talking about being recruited. I remember Jeff Peterson being talking about being recruited to USC, and I'm going, recruited to USC? So right. Now I start asking questions about that. Gary Maddox is talking about he's being talked to by the Giants in terms of being drafted. And I'm going, being drafted? What, for Vietnam?
Right.
No. For professional baseball.
That's right.
Hey, wait a minute. You mean this game can get me into a life that I never even dreamed about?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, let me figure out how to do this. Yeah.
You know, and I want you to expand upon that because I know you're describing it, but I know there's a more in-depth story to your tough upbringing there in South Central LA. And so Pete Flores, who's with Rake City up in Chicago, Pete Flores was a good friend of mine, was one of the first guys to really reach out to me to really think differently about the ABCA and our place confronting diversity in baseball. And he used you as an example, as you know, you wouldn't know this, but man, Coach Lopez comes from a very tough upbringing. So if you ever get him on the podcast, man, you've got to talk about diversity. And I'll tell you, Andy, we've really come a long way since then. We did a podcast earlier this spring. We had Carrick Jackson from Southern. We had Mervo Melendez from Florida National. We had Spencer Allen from Northwestern. And we attacked that issue. And coming from that has been a diversity in baseball committee that will meet in Dallas to make sure that we're doing all we can as an association, that there's coaches out there that feel like they're empowered enough to, you know, help bring up people of color and help bring up the Black community and help really grow diversity in baseball. And I really want you to expand on that. So when you think about, and I know you were referencing this earlier, when you talk about breaking into just playing and professional baseball, then you talk about breaking into coaching. Those are some adverse moments that you really face. Could you talk about that? But then also, where do you see diversity in this game? Maybe what solutions would you offer?
Wow. You know, I applaud you for this. And I really do from that standpoint of establishing an organization that can deal with the diversity that's going on. Ironically,
sure.
I'm having lunch tomorrow here in Tucson, Arizona, with an organization from Los Angeles, though, that is similar to RBI and what Major League Baseball is doing with, you know, rebuilding baseball in inner city.
Mm-hmm.
This is an organization that's working with inner city kids and what have you, and in Los Angeles. And I'm going to have lunch tomorrow with that gentleman, and he, you know, wants to get my input and what have you, because, I mean, that is a reality. The reality that the thing that well, let's deal with the first part first for me in terms of what can we do about it. Well, I think RBI is a marvelous organization. I think this organization I'm meeting with tomorrow, they're just starting off, and you know, I'm going to reach out and say, hey, if I can help you, I'll help you. I say that because I was that kid once. I was that kid that, quite honestly, I was a part of the Persuasions.
Mm-hmm.
In San Pedro, there were the 8th Street Boys, the Able Park Boys, the Monarchs, the Techniques, and the Persuasions. Now, I wish I could tell you we would go around and help old women cross streets, and we would sell cookies on the corner, and we would have car washes.
But you didn't.
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
Well, no, we didn't. And so for 2.5 years of my life, I was making a lot of bad decisions, and by the grace of God, man, you know, I had some people kind of take a liking to me in terms of being an athlete and saying, Mr. Flores, Jesse Flores was a scout for the Minnesota Twins. He came in, watched me play one day and scolded me and said, you know, you're wasting talent. And I said, what? And you're wasting talent. You know, if you're out drinking and smoking and doing this and doing that and doing that, because you got a chance to be a pretty good little infielder. I was a shortstop.
Hmm.
And to hear that, again, and I had the greatest parents in the world, man. My mom and dad were the greatest parents a man could ever have. But they were very limited because of their backgrounds.
Sure.
Again, my mother never drove a car in her life. My father barely spoke the English language. It just was, you know, it was a challenging thing to go home and say, Mom, can you help me with my homework? And she looked at me like, I don't know what the heck that is, right?
Right.
So my thought was, you know, where do I go with this? Well, you know, there's the game of baseball literally reached out and grabbed me by the throat and said, hey, if you want to do something in life, this is an avenue. And I think that's what we need to do even now, because that's still out there. There's a lot of inner city kids that really just need someone to grab them and say, hey, you know what? You can do something with your life if you apply yourself. In regards to, you know, college baseball, I mean, I did an interview with Nightline back in 1991 or 92. I'll never forget this. Ted Koppel.
Wow.
And he asked me about the lack of minorities in college baseball. And, I was at Pepperdine University at the time. And I told him the reality of it. The reality of it is if you would have recruited Andy Lopez, as a senior in high school and come in and said to my mom and dad, listen, I've got 30% scholarship and I really want your son to come play for me. Now you guys have got to come up with 70% more of the scholarship. Right. I would have never went to college.
Yeah.
And the hardest part about it is, you know, we've lost scholarship amounts and we truly have. I mean, I coached at a time when there were 18 full scholarships, mm-hmm. you know, and then it went to 15 full scholarships and now it's 11.7 scholarships. So basically you're not offering any type of full rides to anybody. You're offering partial scholarships to the entire program. And that works okay for middle America and upper America, but man, that's a tough, tough fit when you go into that minority world sociologically and say, hey, look, here's a 50% scholarship. Hey, 50% scholarship of Pepperdine.
Yeah.
Now, all you got to do is come up with $30,000 and we've got a great deal.
That's right. Do the math.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, it's not feasible. And I think that is the biggest reason why you don't see a lot of minorities, you know, in college baseball. Mm-hmm. You just don't.
Yeah.
Economics.
Two points come from that. One, I think Ted Koppel's once quoted as saying when he grows up, he wants to be me behind a microphone. I'm just making, I could be making that up, but it sounds real.
I think I heard him say that.
It's quoted somewhere. You can find it. Use the Google machine. But you made a great point. You know, I know that Craig, our executive director, has had discussions with Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred in particular, and there are some ideas out there with MLB using some of their funds to earmark potential scholarships on the college level for minority players. And so, you know, I think we're putting things in motion, and certainly this committee that we're bringing together, and we're going to hit them and charge them this fall to come to Dallas with some ideas. And certainly Coach Lopez, if you plan on being there, we'd love to have you be part of that. And there's some other guys out there in the community that have a vested interest in this and they want to be part of the solution. That's what we're trying to do, is rally those forces. And I really appreciate you going into that, because I think it helps paint the picture for where this entire conversation is going. I think more than that, it allows the listener to know what perspective you're bringing to the airwaves. And so do us this favor, take us back through your career in baseball, just take us through each step. And then maybe what are the things that you learned along the way?
Ooh. Where do you want me to start on that,
Steve? I know. Just take us into UCLA, leaving UCLA.
Okay, we'll start at UCLA. First of all, I went to junior college. I had to go to junior college.
That's right.
For any young person that listens to this broadcast, do yourself a favor and go to school mm-hmm. and study. Andy Lopez did not do that when he was with the Persuasion. I majored in high school on one thought. Stay eligible. That was it.
That's it.
And so with my poor grades and attendance, I had to go to a junior college for 2 years and get my academic life in order. And after 2 years of doing that, I went to LA Harvard Junior College, had a great experience there. And it was the best thing that happened to Andy Lopez, because he matured mm-hmm. and it was a great, great, great experience for me. And it separated me from my so-called friends. And I grew up a lot. And from there, I went to UCLA. And I'm more proud of this statement than just about anything in my life, because I graduated from UCLA. So a lot of times I sit around and go, my God, I've got a degree from UCLA. Right. And I was in the Persuasion. You know, what the heck? But I'm at UCLA. And what am I learning? Man, I'm learning there's a whole big world out there. Oh, man. Coming from Rancho San Pedro, this little project in L.A., because L.A. Harbor was 10 minutes from Rancho San Pedro. I go to UCLA, and, man, I'm meeting every type of nationality. I'm meeting professors that are just brilliant. And then I'm in a conference now where, man, baseball is really good.
That's right.
And I got to get better. I got to get better. So what do I learn from that experience? I learned time commitment. I learned discipline. I learned accountability. And I was blessed to have a great college coach, Gary Adams, who let us be men and taught us and treated us like men. And so I learned basically my foundation when I went into coaching. It was that if I ever got into it, I didn't think I was ever going to do it, but if I ever got into it, I'm going to treat them like men. I'm going to treat them like men and get them ready for life. And that's what Coach Adams did for us. So I learned some really good stepping stones and building stones and foundational stones that if I've done anything well in life, I give a lot of credit to my time at UCLA.
That's good. Now, breaking into coaching, you're referencing earlier, there was a point where you got a phone call to come on staff and start coaching high school. Take us through that and bring us up to speed through your journey.
Okay. I get drafted in the ninth round out of UCLA. I'm a shortstop. I get drafted by the Detroit Tigers, and I literally give, reaching back to my mom and dad's background. Great parents, outstanding parents. But how could they help me in negotiations? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, my sister got pregnant at 16, so she was busy with her life. My older brother's 11 years older than I am, so, you know, simply do the math on that. When I'm 21, you know, and he's got his life. He's married and all the rest. He's living in Northern California. So I've got nobody to kind of guide me through this negotiation thing, so I hire an agent. And God bless him, but it doesn't go well. And back in, you know, 76, there's no cell phones. So, you know, staying connected with anybody during the negotiations was a nightmare. Long story short, I don't sign a contract. I don't sign a contract, and I botched the negotiations, and life moves on. I go back to the junior college, LA Harvard Junior College, and I'm an assistant there for 1 year, and making no money. And to any young coaches out there, listen to this story. There's a young guy, and I'll out of respect, I won't mention his name, but he's a backup third baseman. I'll use his name as John. So there's a young guy, I make a John Smith. There's John Smith, and he's at LA Harbor Junior College. I'm the assistant. I'm making no money. Mm-hmm. And John Smith's the backup guy, okay? And he's not going to play a lot that year. But John keeps asking me for help. Hey, can you help me? Extra batting practice, extra ground balls. So I'm there day and night with this kid, John Smith. And I think John gets 5 at-bats all year. At the end of the year, life moves on. I'm figuring out what I'm going to do. Now I think, oh, I'll do real estate. I'll go sell life insurance. So I start taking classes and so on and so forth. I'm at my house and a phone call. I get this phone call, and I think it's a prank phone call from one of my buddies. I hang up on the gentleman, literally hang up on him. No. He says, is this Andy Lopez? This is Dick Jacobson, the superintendent of South Bay Union High School District, and I want to talk to him about a baseball, teaching baseball job at MiraCosta High School. I say, yeah. Boom, hang up. Phone rings again. And he says, is this Andy Lopez who played at UCLA last year? Now I go, uh-oh. So I literally said to Mr. Dick Jacobson, who I'm still dear friends with, mm-hmm. and I said, Mr. Jacobson, forgive me. I thought this was a prank call. And he literally offers me the teaching job in Spanish and baseball job and coaching softball football. Now, how did Mr. Jacobson figure who Andy Lopez was? Ready for this? John Smith, who I worked with every day before practice and after practice, right? Because it's easy to work with the superstars in your program.
That's right.
John Smith was the 35th guy in a 32-man roster. Do the math.
Right.
Do the math, okay? I worked with John Smith every day. And I knew he wasn't going to play. And I think he knew he wasn't going to play. But I wonder, did Jacobson's dentist getting his teeth cleaned was John Smith's dad?
Holy smokes.
Hey, I'm in looking for a good young coach at MiraCosta High School. Does your son know anybody out there? He says, you know what? He's got a young guy that's been helping him at Harvard Junior College. And six, da, 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 da. That's how I got the job at MiraCosta High School.
Wow.
Spent 5 years there and had a great time. By the grace of God, won a lot of games. And Dominguez Hills calls me. Mm-hmm. Cal State University, Dominguez Hills. Division II program in Los Angeles back in 1982, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89 was my time there. Back then, Division II schools played guess who? Division I schools.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
That's right.
Oh, on a regular basis. Oh, my schedule was SC, UCLA, Pepperdine, Fullerton, make a road trip every year to the University of Arizona. Tells you how smart I was, yeah. Right? So that's my schedule.
Yeah.
Get ready for this. We have 1 1/4 scholarship and no money for assistant coaches. And I teach 4 lecture classes.
Jeez.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I had different assistant coaches every year because I would convince guys like you, Sheet, hey,
that's
come
right.
help me,
yeah.
and I'll get you tuition remission. I can't pay you a penny, but I'll get you tuition remissions, and you can work on either graduating or getting your master's. Mm-hmm. So I would scour around the local universities. I had Kelly Nicholson from Loyola Marymount
sure.
helping my first year, and Doug Fritz from Pepperdine helped me my first year. And then after that, I just kept getting guys. It's just hit and miss, hit and miss, hit and miss.
Wow.
And then I would raise as much money as I could. And we would play Division I school. So what did I learn there? Well, one is I learned I got my brains beat out my first 2 years.
Scheduling.
Absolutely crushed.
Learned how to schedule.
Yes. And then the other thing I learned was, wow, this game is really hard.
Yeah.
This game is really hard, and I've got to find good players, committed players, And I've got to really make a solid commitment to doing the one thing I think is the most important thing as a coach. And that's forget about the title coach, teach. Mm. You got to be a good teacher. Mm. And if I gained any success at Pepperdine, Florida, and the University of Arizona, it's literally because of my 6 years at Cal State Dominguez Hills. I learned how to teach. I learned how to teach the game there. And so that was my experience there. From there, we go to Pepperdine University. We go to the World Series in 1987 at Cal State Dominguez Hills. I think we finished third. I won't lie to you. We come to Arizona in 1986 from Cal State Dominguez Hills. Coach Kendall's here, dear friend.
Yep.
We beat them 2 out of 3 here in Tucson. They win the Division I national title that year. We go to USC. We beat a team at USC on a Tuesday night at Dominguez Hills. Let's see. They got this guy named Mark McGuire at first. They got this guy named Randy Johnson pitching. Thank God he couldn't throw strikes back then.
Yeah.
And they threw him on a Tuesday night to try to get him to throw some strikes, and he couldn't throw a lot of strikes. And they got this catcher named Jack Del Rio. He's done okay in coaching professional football.
That's right.
So anyway, so I kind of get a name for myself in terms of Dominguez Hills with those type of weekends and those type of wins, Arizona, USC, and going to the World Series. And Pepperdine calls in 1989, offers me their job. And, again, great situation, great place. I follow a gentleman by the name of Dave Gorey, a great baseball man, good man of faith, which my faith was, and it just was an easy fit. And can't thank Coach Gorey enough. God rest his soul. And 4 years into it, we win the national title. We win the national championship in 1992, my fourth year there, and I become the flavor of the month, the hot ticket, so to speak. And I spent another 2 years there at Pepperdine, and then I get offers from a few schools, and I end up taking the offer at the University of Florida. Mm. And that takes me to Florida in 1995. From 95 to 2001, I'm at Florida. We are fortunate to go there, go to World Series a few times, and win the conference a few times. And then from there, Arizona called and said, would you come be our baseball coach? I come here in 2001 and, go to Omaha a few times, win a national championship in 2012. And had heart surgery in 2013, and that pretty much shuts it down.
Yeah. So, my time is up.
But through every stop, I learned something. Through every stop, there were challenges. Through every stop, there were highs and lows. But, I learned something everywhere I went. I learned something at Maricosta. I learned something at Dominguez. I learned something everywhere I went. It was a great trip, great road trip.
It's outstanding, and I truly appreciate you really opening that up and detailing that out. I'm going to go a little bit deeper on something, because you mentioned there was a point where you understood that it is about teaching. It's about teaching the game of baseball, and so you got to get better in that area. I want to do the 30,000-foot overview of your growth as a leader. And so I think more specifically, take us back to that first-year high school coach. I mean, who was that guy as a leader? And then when you look back at your career, when you're looking above it, how did you grow as a leader, as a person that could stand in front of men and motivate them and challenge them and move them and then obviously bring that team together? How'd you grow?
Okay. 23 years of age, I go in there, and I'm the varsity baseball coach, soft football coach, and I'm teaching 5 classes of Spanish, freshman Spanish. I was terrified of losing. My entire identity was in wins and losses. I let people bother me. Parents bother me. Administrators bother me. Media bother me. Everything bothered me. I had an ulcer at 26. We won a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we won a lot. My last year we played at Dodger Stadium for the CIF championship, which is the major championship in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And we were the last game. The last game is 7 o'clock at night, and we were in that game. And that was an interesting story in itself, because it was the same night as the prom. So we got on the bus, and my players had their travel bags and tuxedos. True story.
That's awesome.
True story. I came off the infield routine at Dodger Stadium, and ran into the first base dugout, and their dates were sitting above our dugout in their prom dresses.
Just waiting.
The game ended, and I got on the bus with all the underclassmen, about five of them, because all the juniors and seniors were getting in limousines right next to our bus with their dates going to the prom. So that was an interesting thing. But what I was then is I was terrified. My identity was in wins and losses. I felt great when we won. I felt horrible when we lost. I took it out on my players at times. I know I did. I'm glad that I met people like John Scalinas and Jerry Kendall. To be very candid with you, Sheets, I would be remiss if I didn't say this. I'm glad that I rededicated my life to my faith, to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, my fourth year as a high school coach. I got a whole different perspective on things. And I hope I became the leader that I always wanted to be, and that was a man that understood that iron is going to be poured into your soul in this thing called life. You're going to be stronger. You're going to handle the media well. You're going to handle people well. You're going to handle criticism well. You're going to keep perspective on all things. I told both my national championship clubs in 92 and 90 and 2012, this is a great moment. This is a phenomenal moment. You'll remember this moment the rest of your life, but it's a moment. It's one moment. It's not who you are. It's not your identity. It's a moment that you can celebrate whenever you want with your buddies and think about it, but it's not your identity. And it was my identity when I first started coaching. So I think I evolved because of my faith and because of people like Jerry Kendall and John Scalinas and into a guy that you know, wanted excellence. I demanded excellence on the field to the very last day that I coached. But I hope I had really good perspective that, you know, we're not curing cancer and we're molding young lives and we're trying to get them ready for what it is. I had a saying with our guys, hey, you're not all going to be big leaguers. You know, you're not. Sorry. 1%. 1%. There's more brain surgeons in America than 750 big league baseball players. We're not talking about minor leagues. We're talking about the big leagues. There's more brain surgeons in America than big leaguers. So you're not all going to be big leaguers. But you got a chance to be a big league husband, a big league father, a big league human being. And that was kind of the goal in our programs once I got things settled and hopefully I became that kind of leader.
That's it. You know, you talked about really demanding perfection on the field. You know, we went out in 2014 and saw you coach at Arizona. My team brought my team out to play in Tucson at the Invitational Games. And we went over one night and watched you play Grand Canyon. And you guys were in a bunt defense situation, and you stand up and you call your play, and your team, I have to tell you, your team moved in such a precise, timed way that I literally sat back in my chair and I went, man, if I think I'm coaching bunt defense and that is the example that I'm up against, then there's no way that I'm coaching bunt defense. If you could, I'm going to jump into baseball, I guess, real quick. Okay. But how did you get so technical? And then how did you deliver that in a practice plan? And where did that come from? Is that time with Scalinas? Is that time with others that really showed you that there's a different way to do this? There's a more dedicated, detail-oriented way to do this. How did you arrive at that?
You know what? I was really fortunate. My last 2 years at UCLA were the last 2 years of a man by the name of John Wooden. And I was really lucky. You know, what a time and place. I mean, you could go into Paul Pavilion and watch his practices. I mean, anybody could. You know, nowadays, you need a clearance from the CIA to get into a major Division I basketball practice.
That's about right.
Right? Or football practice. But you could literally, so man, we would get rained out or something would happen. And man, I'd run into Paul Pavilion and literally watch his practice. And I became friends with an All-American forward, David Myers, while I was there on campus. And I used to just pepper him with questions. Tell me what it's like playing for this guy. Tell me what it's like. And he told me, man, he was detailed. Everything was by the minute. Everything was this, everything. So man, as quick as I could, I started asking questions about everything. And then lo and behold, how fortunate am I? I'm the captain of the 1976 UCLA baseball team. And people don't understand, people may not know this, but when John Wooden retired from UCLA coaching basketball, he shared an office. He gave up his office for Gene Bartow, but he shared an office with my coach, Gary Adams. They were in the same office together. So if I went to go see Coach Adams about something, guess who might be there? And he loved baseball. Mm. Oh, my goodness, the man loved baseball. So, man, I would ask him questions and this and that. But here's the kicker to it. I never dreamed of going into coaching. I just wanted to talk to the man about how he did things because he did it so precise, and it was just unbelievable to watch his teams play. And I was a sports fan, but I never thought I'd go into baseball. Well, lo and behold, I will never forget, he said something one day that just absolutely astounded me, and I kept it my entire career. 70% of what comes out of your mouth on the field or on the court, he said, has to be informational. The other 30% is whatever it is. It could be yelling that day. He never yelled. Well, he raised his voice, but he never yelled again. But it could be yelling. It could be jokes. It could be stories. Whatever. But 70% of what comes out of your mouth on that court, and for me, on that diamond, has to be informational. So that was my goal every time I showed up on a field. I'm going to give them as much information as I possibly can, not to overload their minds,
sure,
but the information needed to make a difficult game easier. That was my goal every day. I want to try to make a difficult game easier. So we would go a lot of repetitions. Okay. I live by that teaching adage, you know, explain it, demonstrate it, and then repeat it.
Okay.
So explain what you want done. Demonstrate how you want it done, and if you can't do it, get someone that can.
Mm-hmm.
So explain it, then demonstrate it, and then have a lot of repetitions to it. So when you talk about our bunt defenses, you can ask anybody that ever played for me from Maricosta High School to University of Arizona, and they'll tell you, we worked on defenses, first and thirds, and bunt defenses, and a thing I called street monkey, which is a lot of coverage of the right side and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
We worked on that every single day for 20 minutes. Every single day. Every single day we worked on that. Where it became the three bases of that teaching process. We explained it, we demonstrated it, and we repeated it. And we did it every single day.
Wow.
And that was kind of the way we went about our business. Everything was timed. All our practices were timed. 20 minutes of defensive work, 10 minutes of base running, 50 minutes of team offense, or whatever, then 10 more minutes of base running, and we just went through that every single day. And our guys had a peace of mind about it. You know, we had a daily practice plan, a weekly practice plan, and then as coaches, we had a monthly practice plan. And we deviated, but we deviated based off of what we saw yesterday on the field.
Right.
But we always went in. You know, my trainer had a copy of it. My equipment manager had copies of it. They knew exactly what we were scheduled to do in 2 weeks, or what we were scheduled to do tomorrow. And if it changed, then I let them know. But a lot of times we stayed right on track and try to set that as a goal.
I was trying to put myself back in those stands as you were talking through that. Now, as I'm having my own personal moment of vulnerability going, oh boy, I got to get better at this. I just remembered my shortstop and a couple of guys around him saw it, knew that I saw it, and looked up at me like, is that what we can expect to be doing next week in practice? It was one of those moments like, man, if that's what it's supposed to look like, that's where we got to go.
God bless you, man.
No doubt. That's awesome stuff. And I want to maybe stay a little bit in that same vein, but I want to go this route. You know, so much of this podcast, and here we are with you at episode 88, and we've reflected with so many great coaches and so many different fundamentals and ideas have been thrown about. And I think what's come of this, Andy, is that it's really, yeah, we're trying to grow ourselves as professionals. We're trying to be better baseball coaches. We're trying to be better leaders, better men, better teachers. But at the same time, there's a personal growth element to this. We're becoming better people through this because we're willing to challenge ourselves. We're willing to challenge the status quo. We're willing to never be satisfied with who we are because we know we're always something that's molded, something that's getting better each and every day. So let's stay on that. If you could, from your career in baseball, all the years you spent, what are the most important lessons that you learned in the game that you pulled out into everyday life?
Biggest one is sympathy will kill you.
Okay.
That was the biggest lesson I learned. As a player, as a coach, even now as a 65-year-old man with four kids and heart disease, right? Mm-hmm. I got heart disease. Hey, whether I like it or not, I got heart disease. So I got to take care of myself, and I got four new arteries. They haven't given me a warranty on these doggone things, so I got to keep taking care of myself.
That's right.
Anyway, but sympathy will kill you. Mm. And life is hard. And if you start feeling for yourself, you're probably halfway done to get beat.
Mm.
Sympathy will kill you, and most of the time you need a good swift kick and then you know where, and just get yourself going. because that's what it is. Are you looking for comfort or are you looking for growth? And the beauty of athletics and baseball in general for Andy Lopez as a player and as a coach was when I looked for growth, I got better as a player and as a teacher. Mm. When I looked for comfort, I went in the opposite direction.
That's it.
I got complacent. I got lazy.
Yep. Stayed the same.
Be it in recruiting, be it in not taking enough ground balls or the sort of stuff. Hey, listen, I led the state of Arizona. I'm sorry. I led the state of Cal in 1972. There's a shortstop at LA Harbor Junior College by the name of Lopez that led the state of California in errors.
Let them.
Yes, in 1976, I was voted outstanding Pac-12 defensive player.
Wow.
Same shortstop.
Yeah.
Well, what happened? You got better? No. I was looking for comfort as a junior college player, and I was looking for growth from that day on. In other words, I'm going to get better. So hit me some more ground balls. See, young people have to come to grips with, and even some of the teachers out there and coaches, there's no magical technique. Mm-hmm. It's hard work and repetition. It's teach, and explain, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat. There's no magical technique out there. And so, those are the things that I learned that have really carried me my entire life. I mean, sympathy will kill you. And, don't feel sorry for yourself. If you're in a tough situation, hey, Dominguez Hills was a dogfight.
Sure.
Whew, man, Dominguez Hills for Andy Lopez was a dogfight. And there were a lot of times when I felt sorry for myself. And I kicked myself in the you-know-what and said, you know what? Nobody's going to feel sorry for you.
That's it.
You're either going to make it in this profession or you're not. And there were a lot of times in other places too, man. I mean, at the end of my first year at Florida, there was a headline in the local paper that called me the most hated man in Florida with a picture of me smiling when I took the job, at the press conference. And the headline on it was the most hated man in Florida. Come on, man.
Did they vote on that, or is that opinion based?
I think so. But here's the beauty of it for you young coaches out there. When you get into a tough situation and you've got to make hard decisions, mm-hmm. right? So I made a bunch of hard decisions at the end of my first year. In other words, I made a lot of personnel changes.
Yeah.
And I was the most hated man in Florida. There was a local high school coach that said, I will not allow Andy Lopez and his staff to ever step on foot on this campus. Okay. Why? Well, because two of his players were less than what I wanted in terms of seeking excellence in the classroom and on the field. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know what? You guys can go somewhere else, but we got to get guys in here that really want to get this thing done right. Okay. Now, the irony to it, that was after my first year. The end of my second year, Skip Burtman came into Gainesville, Florida, and we had a bunch of freshmen. They were really good players playing for us. And we were we started as an unranked team that year in 1996. We were unranked, and now we are fifth in the nation. And Skip Burtman shows up with the number one team in the nation. Mm-hmm. It's the end of the year. It's late in April. The year before now, in May, so it's not even a year, I'm the most hated man in Florida because of hard decisions. A year later, it's not even a year yet, it's late April, and they come in and we sweep LSU 3 games.
Jeez.
And we become the number one team in the nation.
Yeah.
And guess what happens after the final Sunday game against LSU when we sweep them? There are 4,000 people in the stands chanting my name. Lopez, Lopez, Lopez. And I'm thinking, I was the most hated guy in Florida last year.
Wow.
So you learn toughness. You learn discipline. You learn, don't feel sorry for yourself. Sympathy will kill you. Mm. Kick yourself in the you-know-what and get going and teach.
Awesome. I know you're still involved in the game and you still watch baseball. Is there something, even a guy with your extensive experience in the dugout, is there something that maybe you saw watching a game or just in a conversation with someone that really challenged you, that possibly if you were coaching today, it would change the way that you would teach a certain aspect? Is there anything you could point to?
Yeah, I can go through. I do Pac-12 television, so I'm a baseball analyst. Mm-hmm. I do about 12, 14, 15 games a year for the Pac-12, so I still get to see that. And yes. In fact, I've mentioned this to the coaches when I go down before the game and talk to them. One is the increase of velocity.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It is unbelievable, is it not? I mean, you got college pitchers now throwing 93, 94, 95 miles an hour. It's unreal.
Sure.
So the weight, the all the different things that are going on, the weighted balls and other this, you know, all these things are going on now. You know, that was foreign to me, and if I were doing it now, I would definitely get involved in that. I mean, there's just way too much velocity out there, and there's got to be a reason. Someone's teaching velocity.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point. Someone's
mm-hmm.
teaching velocity. One, two is the shifts that are going on defensively.
Yeah,
I'll be honest with you. When they first started showing up, I was not a big fan of it. In fact, I used to think, man, I wouldn't do it. But you know, the more games I do, the more I watch, and I see even in the College World Series right now, teams shifting around on particular hitters. You know, I'm getting won over. I'm slowly becoming a guy that I would pay attention to all night. You know, we always had scouting reports, but my goodness, I would never shift three guys to one part of the field and leave the shortstop hole. I wouldn't do that. If I were coaching today, I probably would lean towards doing that.
Mm.
And the other thing is something that was really probably the hardest thing that I had to come to grips with after my heart surgery is that young people, they still want to win. They still want to be successful. I'll never, ever, ever believe anything other than that. But I really do believe you need to communicate with them more than probably Andy Lopez did at times. And in other words, I grew up in an era where, you know what, hey, when a coach told you jump, what was the standard thing, the famous cliche?
How high?
Okay, how high?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think now you got to explain why you wanted to jump.
Hmm.
I think you got to explain that a little bit. I think they're sharp enough. I think they've come through so many travel teams and experiences, and they've traveled all over. Hey, man, the first time I got on a jet airplane, I was 21. I was 20 years old, and we were flying to Tucson. UCLA is going to play the University of Arizona. That was the first time I went to an airport, and I'm 20 years old.
Sure.
Some of these guys have been all over the country, and some of them to Japan and Korea and Taiwan mm-hmm. before they're 13. You know, so it's a whole different young life, and with social media and all the thing that's going on, I think you got to spend some time and whether you want to call it relational or just explain why you're asking them to do what you're asking them to do. I just think that's important now.
Yeah.
And so if I were a young coach, those are the three things I'd bear down on. Hey, how do we teach velocity? One. Hey, what's these numbers? What's this famous sabermetrics numbers in terms of shifting and some other things? And you know what? I probably need to spend a little bit more time explaining why we ask them to do what we're doing.
That's it. Almost down number two real quick, because I'm guessing in 16, when Arizona made their run into the national championship game, I'm guessing Sergio's moves were absolutely blowing your mind. Am I right? Because he was shifting, and that was the talk is, man, he's really taken that pro analytics system, that idea of shifting and understanding numbers and percentages,
right.
And he was moving
right.
guys around, and that was the talk on all the broadcasts. Man, he is really putting himself defensively in a he's like,
yeah.
No, I'm playing the numbers here, and it seemed to work out.
Yeah, no, I the more I see it, the more I mean, I'm watching it this last couple of weeks in Omaha. I mean, you know, you're seeing guys get up and hey, there's one guy on the left side of the infield. He's going, wait a minute. I mean, if that were me, I'd say, whoa, time out. Whoa, what do you get back over there? Get back
sure.
over there. I think that's the reality of it now. I really do.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, so we talked obviously about your resume and taking three teams to the World Series, winning two national championships. I mean, countless players have gone into professional baseball. But the question we always ask on this show, Andy, is, how do you, and I know there's something well past that, the wins and the losses, how do you define success?
Wow. You know what? I did it for 38 years as a head coach. And when I really think about, you know, I would never be foolish enough to think that I could do anything or say anything better or define it better than John Wooden's mm-hmm. definition. And probably everybody knows it, right? The peace of mind and knowing that you've done the best you can
and
what you do. Okay. So I understand that. For me, success, when I look back as a coach, my success, I now, and again, I'm reaching back now. Remember, my first few years, I said I was caught up in the identity of wins
mm-hmm.
and losses.
Mm-hmm.
I was scared to lose. I didn't handle the media well. I didn't handle parents well. I didn't handle administrators well. all insecurities. I thank God that my security came from my faith through John Salinas, through the Jerry Kindles of the world. And at the end of my career, I really felt this, and I feel it now more than ever because I've been out of the game now since 2015, and I still have great communication with my ex-players. A lot of good stories and some not so good stories. One of my ex-guys, to be honest with you, was found dead last week in Guatemala, and 41 years old, and having to call his father and talk to him, that's no fun. So when I look at success, I look at, have the lifestyles of my athletes, have their lifestyles changed and developed where they are working human beings in society. I'm thankful to say this. For the most part, I could say, you know what? Forget about the over 12,000 wins or whatever. Forget about the national championships and all those other things. Hey, a lot of my guys are doing okay in life. Yep. They're doing okay in life. So I mean, I can sit right now and be at peace that, we challenge them a lot. And we put a lot of standards on them, and we put a lot of things on them, and we demand a lot of things. But have their lifestyles exhibited success from the standpoint that they are functioning human beings? They're good fathers. They're good businessmen. They're good doctors. They're men of integrity. They're functioning in our society. That to me feels like success.
It's outstanding. Take us into highs and lows. I love this question. It's one that we haven't asked in a long time, but I felt like it was appropriate when you have someone, like you said, 38 years in the game and countless opportunities to really draw upon. But what are the highs and lows that come from that? What are the high moments that you still sit back in your chair and reflect on? And then what are the lows that really punch you in the gut?
Yeah, I got you. The highs, first of all, in life, that my players, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I told every one of my guys, every one of my clubs, I say, hey, fellas, let's be realistic. One of you guys might make it to the big leagues. One of you. I'm sorry if I'm ruining your dreams.
Yeah.
But one of you, those are the odds. One of you might make it to the big leagues. But all of you have a chance to be big league human beings. The highs are, for the most part, vast majority of my guys are big league human beings. That's a real high for me right now. They're big league human beings. In baseball, hey, come on. Two national championships, one at Pepperdine, one at Arizona. I mean, come on. We went to Omaha in 92, Sheets, and they introduced me at the banquet as Al Lopez.
I like Al. That's a good.
Hey, Al.
Hey, Al.
Said, hey, they said, hey, Al, you want to come up here and get ready? It gets better. Hey,
who?
Al, you can ask anybody to play for me. Mark Lazakowski, the coach of Pepperdine right now, he talks about this all the time. Steve Rodriguez was on that team at Baylor. He talks about that. Hey, Al, come on up here and introduce yourself and introduce your Pepperdine. They said Dean.
Goodness.
Wade. So they didn't know my name, and they didn't know how to say the name of the school.
So you know what? We'll just take that trophy and take it back to Malibu with us.
hey, but you know what? What a high.
That's it.
Because I remember the next day of practice in a high school in Omaha, I looked at my guy and said, hey, fellas, they don't even know my name, and that's okay. But they don't even know how to say your name. So you know what? You got a choice. You can get out of here in two games, and they'll never know my name, and they'll never know how to say Pepperdine. Or you can stick around for 2 weeks and be the last flag flying, right?
That's the last flag
in Omaha.
That's it.
Now the flags, there's one school flag that flies. And those son of a gun did it. They won a national title. So that's a high option. And then 2012 here, man, I was so blessed, Sheets. My two sons played for me for 4 years at the University of Arizona, and they were on the national championship team in 2012. So, how can you put that into words? Not only do you win a national title, but your sons are on the team, So anyway, those are the highs that come to my mind right away. The lows, life. Again, when I hear that one of my guys is found dead in Guatemala last week, and how do you explain that? One of my players committed suicide a few years back, and you wonder, did you reach him? You wonder, should you have seen something different? Could you have done something that you just go through, you rehearse it over and over and over. You just don't want to see these young guys that you were with 6 days a week, and working out every day and on road trips and waiting in airports and getting on bus rides and this and that. And you just want to see them succeed in life. So when they don't, it breaks your heart. Mm-hmm. It breaks your heart. So that's always been a tough one for me. In baseball, the 98 club. I just went back for a reunion in Gainesville about late April, and we had a reunion, 20-year reunion for the 1998 club. Let's explain who's on that club. David Ross, right? Dancing with the Stars, David Ross.
Yeah.
Forget about Chicago Cubs. Forget about Chicago Cubs. Dancing with the Stars, David Ross. Josh Fogg, who pitched in a World Series with the Colorado Rockies.
Yep.
Mark Ellis, 14-year big leaguer in the pit with the big leaguers. There's about five guys in the big leagues from that club, right? Mm. We went in as the number one team in the nation. Brad Wilkerson, 14-year career. Mm-hmm. We went into Omaha as the number one team in the nation, number one seed. And Sheets, we played as poorly as you could play the game of baseball. And what did I learn from that? I learned that it's not the best team that wins. It's the hottest team that wins.
That's it.
And I learned something that I've told my fellow coaches whenever they call me. And they call me more now that I'm out of the game. I go, hey, you know what? You're going to hit a stretch in the season where even if you're a really good team, the game's really hard, mm-hmm. and you got to just wait it out. The game gets really hard for your team. It gets hard to get a hit. It gets hard to throw a strike. It gets hard to play catch. I don't know how to explain it, but there's a stretch in every guy's season or every team's season where the game gets really hard. Just hope that stretch isn't in Omaha.
Mm.
And that's the reality.
That's it.
There are some stretches, yeah.
God, that's awesome.
So that was a low one for me. That's the one, I won't lie to you. I showed up at the reunion. I looked at all of them, and I love them, and we have a great relationship. And back in the game, we were there, like I said, in late April. I was there with Sullivan, Kevin O'Sullivan, Kathy Sullivan. We were all laughing with them before the game and all of that. But we got together. I looked at this group with the 98, and I said, you know, fellas, every day I wake up and I think, my God, Andy, how did you screw this one up? That's the best team you ever coached. And you didn't win a national championship.
Right.
So it happens, man. It happens.
Well, they always say you can coach your way into wins. You can also coach your way into losses as well. So there might be some to that.
Exactly.
You know, go back to what we were talking about earlier and certainly the upbringing and what you're into. But as you matured, and if you took baseball out, where do you think you landed? What would have been your career? What would you have done if you'd never gotten into coaching?
Something in the ministry.
Okay. Back
in 1982, ironically, in 1982, I quit my high school job in September, and my principal, God bless him, Mr. Carl Fisher, he hired me at 23 years of age through the advice of Dick Jacobson, now the superintendent of schools. But I remember looking at him thinking, my God, this guy's hiring me. I don't even know what I'm doing here. And I went into him in September. As I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, in my fourth year there, I rededicated my life to the Lord. And I went into him in September. I said, Mr. Fisher, I just want you to know I'm going to be leaving at the end of this year. And he looked at me and said, you got a job? And I went, no, I don't have a job. And he said, wait a minute, you can't leave? You don't have a job. And I, you know, we would win a lot of games, and we ended up playing at Dodger Stadium that year. This was September, and the beginning of school year. Mm-hmm. In June, we played at Dodger Stadium. And four or five times, he would come to my room out of nowhere and say, now, Lopez, you're still leaving? And I said, yeah, I'm letting you know in advance. I'm gone at the end of the show. This is my last year. And he said, well, what are you going to go do? And I said every time, I said, I don't know, but I know I'm going to go do something in the ministry, but I don't know what it is. And so I literally started studying through my pastor to be ordained in the Assembly of God Church, and was planning on doing that. And at the end of the June series, or the Dodger Stadium series, as a high school coach, Dominguez Hill called up, and my pastor gave me great wisdom. He said, you know, Andy, you'll be able to minister more to young people as a baseball coach than you will in anything else in life. Mm-hmm. And so I took the Dominguez Hill's job. But if I wouldn't have gone into coaching, something in the ministry.
Okay.
Something in the ministry.
There you go. Now, here are a few questions, a little run here that we're going to make that are staples of our podcast. And I think they're ways that we can learn a little bit more about you. It's also, we call it the pull back the curtain moment, where we really get to find out what's going on. So take us into hidden talents. What would you offer? And then hobbies, things that keep you busy now, especially now that you're outside of coaching.
Oh, God, hidden talents. Well, all I can say is that whenever I grab a screwdriver and walk through the house, all four of my kids, they're out of the house now, but when they were little, they'd all run and hide. Oh, my God, Dad's got a screwdriver. The house is going to blow up.
Right.
So I'm not very talented in terms of fixing things around the house.
Okay.
I read a lot. I love theological readings. I love to read theology. I love to study the Bible. I spend most of my time doing that now. I mentor at-risk kids 2 days a week. And that's a challenge. You know, kids that don't have families and are in foster homes, and just high school kids that are trying to get a high school degree. Mm-hmm. I do that 2 days a week. Hidden talents, man. God dang it. That's a tough one. You'd have to ask my wife, but she'd probably say, the guy's got no talent.
Yeah.
Hey, let me put it this way. Wait. You know what, Chief? Let me put it this way. This will answer the question for you, right? My nickname in my immediate family, when my mom and dad were alive, my brother and sister to this day still, my nickname was the baseball bum.
Wow. There it is.
In other words, yeah. He doesn't do anything.
There ain't
but
nothing
play
else.
Baseball,
yeah. Sure. Hey, I think you're a great company because there's a lot of guys that have answered it that way on this show.
Good. I don't feel so bad.
No doubt. You shouldn't. Funniest stories over the years. That's always one we'd like to get into. So maybe it happened on a bus or a hotel or anywhere in the locker room. Give me some.
Okay. I got two. For me, they were classics.
Okay.
I take the job in 1982 at Cal State Dominguez Hills, and we're really bad. We are really, really bad. We're horrible. God bless those guys that played for me, but man, hey, you know what? If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it flies, it's a duck, right?
It's a duck.
We're really bad. So in 1983, we go on a road trip to San Luis Obispo, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. And at that time of my life, I really loved apple juice. I mean, I drank it. I loved it. And I don't know if anybody out there remembers the bottles of apple juice, the clear bottles, but the little, but they, you know, apple juice. So you had that brownish tone to it. It's
sure.
Apple juice, right? It's a clear bottle.
Oh, boy.
So we get, oh, yeah, listen to this. We get beat on Friday night. We get crushed. I mean, we get crushed. And we're staying at this little podunk hotel in San Luis Obispo. And I get up early because I jog. And I get up early, I go for my run, I take my shower, and I go down to this little store down the walkway from this hotel, and I buy two bottles of apple juice. And I don't want to go in my hotel room. I'm a little disturbed by last night's game, so I'm just going to get out of the room. So I'm sitting on the curb in the parking area of the hotel. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
So picture that. There's the baseball coach at Dominguez Hills. We just got our brains beat out all last year. And now we got our brains beat out. Like I said, my first 2 years at Dominguez Hills, we were not very good.
Yeah.
And so now I'm sitting there, and we just got beat on Friday night. It's Saturday morning. It's about 9 in the morning. And we didn't have an organized team breakfast. It's Division II baseball. You know, you give them $5 and tell them to survive,
that's
right?
It.
You know?
Yep.
And so there go my guys, and I see them walking out of their rooms. They're walking through the parking lot, and they're going down to the little store that I just went to, you know, 30 minutes ago. So I'm sitting there, and I got one bottle of apple juice in my hand and another bottle sitting next to me. Well, guess what it looks like to them?
I know exactly what it looks like.
So the rumor the rest of that weekend was, holy smokes.
Yeah.
Coach Lopez, a man of faith, is drinking beer at 9 in the morning because of how bad we're playing.
Right.
Gosh. And that was the line the rest of the year among the guys. It was, hey, man, we got to play better.
Yeah.
We're making this guy turn into an alcoholic.
Starting to drink a problem here.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was apple juice. It was that. But, you know, and I found out the whole story about a week after that road trip. And I shared it with, I guess, guys, come on, man.
Yeah.
I was drinking apple juice. And they're going to be like, yeah, that was apple juice.
That's awesome.
Anyway, so that's one. 92, this is a classic one. 92, we're at Pepperdine University. We're good. We're very good. Mm-hmm. We're so good, we're going to win the national title. I don't know that, but we're pretty good, and I know that. We go down to the University of San Diego, and we drove vans at Pepperdine.
Yeah.
I drove a van. My two assistants drove a van, so we had three vans. Well, we get beat on the last game there, and we play unbelievably sloppy. And I was very demanding. I was very demanding, and I felt that we won the first two games, and I thought we just threw our uniforms out on the third game. I felt like we just threw them out there. We're pretty good now. We are. We threw our uniforms out there, and we get beat. So I get the guys up, and I go, okay, this is the deal, fellas. Here's your meal money. Here's your $5 or $8 or whatever, this and that. I'm not stopping to eat. My van's not stopping to eat. I can't eat. I'll get sick on the whole thing. I'll get sick the way we played, et cetera, et cetera. This is ridiculous. You got to have more standards in this. You got to have more pride in this. So my van is not stopping to eat. I'm going home. So whoever wants to go home with me, I'm getting in my van. See you tomorrow on the field. I get my stuff. I go up the stairs. I get to the van. I get in the van. One guy gets in the van. David Lovell from Punahou High School in Hawaii. Middle infielder.
Okay.
Lives in Dallas, Texas right now, and David and I are still good friends. David jumps in the van and gets in the very, very back. If he could have, he would have been outside hanging on the window because right. He didn't want to be around Coach Lopez.
Yep.
I wasn't in a good mood. For those of you who are on sheets, I wasn't in a good mood. I didn't like losing.
Sure.
I love the Lord. And listen, I love the Lord with all my heart. I hate losing.
Right.
God still works on that with me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm driving home, two and a half hour drive to San Diego. And I'm going to be real candid about this. I'm not proud of this, Sheets, but I'm probably exceeding the speed limit a little bit because I just want to get home.
Yep.
I'm mad and I want to get home. I want to get this loss out of my system. So I'm exceeding the speed limit. So now, anybody that's driven the freeways of L.A. know that you can't exceed it too much because there's so much traffic.
Sure.
But when the opportunity came, I'm exceeding them a little bit. At one point, David and I talk about this, and I see David on a pretty regular basis because my son works at Howard Junior College. He's mm-hmm. a pitching coach down there. Mm-hmm. And so I go to Texas, and I'll go to Dallas when he has games, and I'll see David. David will come sit around and talk and all of that. So we laugh about this all the time. And I said, so I'm driving. There's only one guy in the van, David Lowe from Punahou High School in Hawaii. And I look up, and I'm exceeding the line. And I look in the rearview mirror, and David Lovell has his batting helmet on.
Prepared.
And I look at Lovell, and I go, what do you got that on for? He says, I don't think we're going to make it home alive, Coach.
Oh, that'll take the sting out for just a minute.
Yeah. I slowed down. At that point, I slowed down. I said, David, take your helmet off. And if you want, you can come up here and sit in the front seat if you'd like. Let's talk about it.
That's outstanding.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Those were good shares right there. Love this question. And I'd love, you've mentioned so many great, just the legends of baseball inside some of your answers. But we always talk about the sports radio talk, the personal Mount Rushmore, the three or four people in baseball that impact you the most. Who's up there for you?
Wow. Okay. Okay. There's going to be some people out there going to be shocked at this. First of all, I want to give first of all, let me just give a side note here. Mike Martin, Jerry Kendall, Skip Bertman, Jimmy Wells at Alabama, Augie Rito, those guys poured into my life as a mm-hmm. young coach. Whether I liked it or not, there were a lot of times I played those guys and they beat my brains out on the weekend and I went home and went, man, I got to get better.
Sure.
But they also shared. I have a great friendship with all those gentlemen. I know Coach Kendall and Coach Garrido left us, but I still stay in close contact with Mike Martin. In fact, I texted him just the other day about his coming year. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Wells and I talk once a week on the phone. Really did a marvelous job at Alabama. Mm-hmm. And Coach Bourbon and I have talked, over the years. Last year, we've talked a lot, too. So I want to give credit to those gentlemen. Now, Mount Rushmore for Andy Lopez. This is just for Andy Lopez.
Yep.
Okay? John Scalinas. Unbelievable. Anybody that can Google John Scalinas or get his videos or his teaching videos, John Scalinas taught me more about the game and about life and about my faith than any man on earth other than my father.
Mm-hmm.
John Herbel was a long, legendary high school coach in Los Angeles. And John Herbel was, I think, the most misunderstood man on the face of the earth for Andy Lopez. People called him nuts. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And I spent every moment I could with him recruiting or sitting around watching games, and I learned so much from John Herbel. Unbelievable. Jim O'Brien was my head coach when I was the assistant at LA Harbor, and Jim was a brilliant offensive mind. And any of these guys are all legendary ABCA guys.
Sure.
And I think they're all, and to be honest, I think every single one of these guys in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Gillespie. I knew Mike Gillespie as a junior college coach. Coached against him in junior college, coached against him at Dominguez Hills, coached against him at SC, coached against him. Mike Gillespie, wow, I learned a lot, just learned a lot.
Yeah.
And my coach, Gary Adams, my baseball coach at UCLA, Gary Adams. So those are the guys for me that really, really, the Jerry Kendalls, the Mike Martins, the Augie Greels, the Skip Berman, those guys, man, they poured into my life. Whether I wanted it or not, they poured into my life, but I wanted it. But John Scalinas, John Herbel, Jim O'Brien, Mike Gillespie, Gary Adams, man, those guys really, really molded me. And they probably didn't even know they were doing it.
Yeah.
But they did.
That's so great. You mentioned Michael, your son, who again is assistant at Howard Community College or Junior College down in Texas, and he's also assisting the Savannah Bananas this summer with a former podcast guest, Tyler Gillum. So I'm keeping my finger on the pulse. Right. I know what's going
there
on.
There you go. Attaboy.
But I think about him as I prepare for this question. I'm thinking about a guy like him. I'm thinking about a young college coach. I'm thinking about a young high school coach that's out there. I'm thinking about a guy that's in his first few years of coaching, and he's really trying to figure this whole thing out. And we both know, I spent 11 years coaching college. We both know you can't give them a special pill. We can give them all the advice that we want. We can lay out the plan, but they've got to walk the path, and they've got to, you know, they're going to make some ups and downs. But if you could speak directly to those young coaches that are paying attention to this podcast, Andy, what advice do you have for them? What's something that you could say to them and send them down a much better path?
Okay. The first part of this answer comes from my own personal experience, as I mentioned a couple of times. My first 3 or 4 years as a high school coach, I had duodenal ulcer. I was a mess because, you know, again, scared to lose, and my identity was in wins and losses. And to be very candid with you, my faith was very weak. Mm-hmm. So the first part of that answer is going to be this, and I pay all respect to those, but, you know, please let me be respectful in my answer. Honor your God. Honor your God, strengthen your faith. Because in reality, you know, that's what's going to get you through some tough times. Mm-hmm. The second part of the answer is very basic for me. I grew up in Los Angeles, and I listened to Vin Scully do Dodger baseball, right? And Vin Scully could coach the game. If you listen to Vin Scully, he'd say, it's a 2-2 count here. It's a good time to steal second base, and son of a gun if that guy wouldn't run.
That's right.
A 3-1 count here. It's a good time to stay out of the double play, and son of a gun if that guy didn't go. You know, he's up in the his last two pitches are up in the strike zone, and he's got 70 pitches in him. You know, it's probably a good time to make a pitching change here, and son of a gun, they make a pitching change. And I learned something listening to Vince Scully. And no, this is not disrespectful. Now, you're saying, what would you tell a young coach? Because I've said this to my son on many occasions. Honor God, and then get ready. And teach. Learn to be a good teacher, because Vin Scully could coach.
Yeah.
In other words, Vin Scully could tell you, it's a 2-2 count. It's a good time for this runner to steal second base. Yeah. Can Vin Scully teach that runner how to get a good jump, read pitch out in his first step so he doesn't get thrown out of the pitch out, and steal second base? So there's a vast difference between coaching and teaching. My advice would be, honor God, honor your faith, and teach. And when you're done teaching, teach a little bit more. And when you're done teaching, teach a little bit more. And keep teaching.
That's so good. This has been everything I hoped it would be. I know we've put about a week between us first talking and get to the moment where we can record. But Coach Lopez, man, you have so much to offer. And I just wanted to wind you up, let you roll all over the airwaves. And, man, you really poured some certified audio gold out for our coaches. Just beyond thankful. There's men like you. They're inside the ABCA, certainly inside our Hall of Fame. Thankful for what you've done for the game of baseball, and we just wish you the best of luck moving forward. Thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Jeez, hey man, I've been blessed having this time with you. Anything I can do in the future, don't hesitate.
Thanks so much for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and checking out another one of our Dugout Chatter episodes. Now, here at the American Baseball Coaches Association, we are here to serve coaches around the world, so let us know how we can help. Head over to our website, abca.org, for more information. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, at ABCA1945. You can also find us on Facebook as well. And feel free to reach out to me directly on Twitter, at CoachSheets3, or by email at Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We'd love to hear from our loyal members and continue to find ways to keep growing this game together. As always, coaches, thank you for listening in and staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Until next week, coaches, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.